This is Digital Story Podcast number 968, October 8th, 2024. Today's theme is 1,200 miles to Durango. I'm Derek Story. Most folks aren't crazy enough to load up an EV in Northern California and drive over 1,000 miles to Durango, Colorado. But that's exactly what I did last week for our photography workshop, and it was amazing. Hear all about it on this week's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. On the Wednesday before I departed, I removed the tent box rooftop tent and companion rollout awning from the top of the VW ID4. If I was going to drive one day through California, then the next through Arizona, New Mexico, and finally arriving in Colorado, I knew I would need to squeeze every mile out of each charging stop. I refueled in places like Lost Hills, Mojave, Needles, Winslow, Gallup, and yes, Durango. My Bodega portable refrigerator was packed with sandwiches, fruit, and string cheese. Behind the front seat, I stashed Triscuits, almonds, and homemade banana bread. In the front cup holders, there were two water bottles with a 3.8-liter refill tank in the back hatch. My camera rode shotgun on the front seat. The first day, I navigated 700 miles from Santa Rosa, California, to Kingman, Arizona. The most challenging stretch was on Highway 40 in Arizona, where big rig trucks race 75 miles an hour or faster. Since I was using adaptive cruise control to optimize my speed, I was locked in at the speed limit in the right lane. In the rearview mirror, I would see an oncoming truck closing in on me, shifting to the left lane, then leaving me behind in its tailwind. Streamlining the car paid off. With nothing on the top racks, I averaged between 3.3 and 3.5 miles per kilowatt. I would get a little nervous climbing the Tehachapi Mountains in 90-degree heat, then experience relief as the car regenerated electricity going down the 6% grade on the backside. After 2 days of driving, I arrived at Curry Barn outside of Durango, Colorado. It was worth the journey. We had a total of 7 participants, with each having their own private or semi-private sleeping area. There were 2 spacious common areas, one for dining and the other for our lab work. At night, we could walk out the back door and photograph the Milky Way on a moonless, dark sky evening. During the day, we explored the Animas River, downtown Durango, Mesa Verde, and rode the train to Silverton. After a shoot, we would return to Curry Barn for refreshments and to work on our pictures together, seated at a long table with 8 chairs. We ate breakfast, lunch, and dinner together. And when we couldn't eat another bite, take another picture, or edit another image, we flopped into bed hoping for a good night's sleep so we could have energy for the next day. The images our group produced were beautiful. Scenes from an Old West mining town, fall color, a steam engine train rolling along the cliffs and then the rivers, the remains of an ancient indigenous civilization, and of course portraits of each other as we worked in the high mountains of Colorado. The week passed too quickly. We had to say our goodbyes, and then I loaded up the VW and headed back to California. Another 1,200 miles in front of me. Plenty of time to relive the memories of an amazing week. So I just kind of wanted to read that piece to you, my initial thoughts after I returned from Durango. When we have these types of workshops where we all live together, the whole thing, you know, the planning of it, the execution of the workshop itself, you know, all of that, on one hand, it's very challenging because there are so many moving parts. But talk about risk versus reward. I mean, when these things come off, and so far, every one of them has, then it's just amazing afterwards. It's actually quite mind-blowing because, as one of our workshop participants said, it goes beyond the photography. I mean, the photography was fantastic. It goes into the interpersonal discussions, the relationships that form, the exchange of ideas. I mean, we don't get to do this very often, hang out with people that we're truly interested in. We truly are interested in what they're doing. You know, instead of, you know, having to go to some function or some gathering and listen to folks talk about their work that we don't really care about that much. This is so different than that. This is 180 degrees different than that. And it's just absolutely fantastic. Now, I should follow up on a couple things that I talked about leading up to the workshop. The first one was, well, how did it go with the bag, right? I talked about the bag before I left. Well, it went quite well. I tell you, I have a picture of the Lopro Trekker Light hanging on a hook on the Silverton train in the San Juan car. And I mean, these cars were beautiful. They were just like right out of the Wild Wild West, you know, wood finishing everywhere, you know, metal hooks hanging from places, windows that opened. You could actually open the windows on the train. And we planned this. So I got the seats so that on one side in the San Juan car, it's a mid-level car. It's not first class, but it's not coach. It's kind of somewhere in there. It only had three seats per row. So it had two seats on one side, and then the other side was just a single seat, which was fantastic for us. So each one of our guys got their own seat where they could hang out the window and take pictures as this train, I mean, for over 3 hours each direction, as this train rolled along the tracks through aspens that were just absolutely at their peak. They were so beautiful. Alongside a river, I believe it was the Animas River, you know, just the upper part of it. And then, you know, hanging out the window as the train, you know, because we were more near the back than the front, so we could see the train in front of us, all the cars in front of us, as it inched along the narrow gauge tracks along the side of a cliff. And you're looking at this picture, you know, that we would take hanging out the window of the train in front of us alongside that cliff, and you'd just be going, wow. At the time, I knew it was steep, and I had a feeling it was slightly precarious, but now that I look at this photo, oh man. And it was funny because we would study the, you know, there would be structure underneath the track, you know, to hold the side of the mountain together and all of that. And you're looking at that and go, wow, that looks like it's been patched and patched and patched. It was very exciting. And it was funny, the next day after we did the train ride to Silverton, and Silverton is over 9,000 feet in altitude, a mining town, as you can guess, in its day. And now just a very interesting place to hang out. But it was funny, the next day, I did something and I bumped my right side, right about my ribs. And I go, wow, ooh, that's a little tender. I wonder what happened there. And then I go, oh, I am bruised on the side there from hanging out the side window as we rode this train, you know, all the way up to Silverton, 9,000 feet, and then all the way back down to Durango, which is, what, 7,000 feet or something like that. It was just nuts. It was absolutely crazy. The other thing about it is that inside the train, it was a treat unto itself. One of my favorite shots is just something simple like the number of the car in wood above the doorway, you know, before you go to the next car. And it's just gorgeous. And the woodwork all around it, you don't see stuff like this anymore. And of course, we all tried to get shots of the steam engine, you know, when we were behind and it'd be going along a big curve and you're hanging out trying to get that perfect shot of the scenery and the river, the color, the engine, steam coming out whenever he would do the horn. Wow. Anyway, it was really good stuff. So I'm sorry, I drifted there for a moment because really what I was talking about was my bag. So my bag wasn't too big and I took it on the train. I had everything I needed in it, not only my camera gear, but I foolishly brought a laptop and I even more foolishly suggested other people might want to do that for the ride back. I was thinking, okay, it's like 3 hours back. We will have already been on the rails all day. Maybe we might want to work on some of our pictures on the way back. Oh, that was funny. So at least two folks, maybe three of our workshop participants asked me when we got back to Durango, so how much laptop work did you do? Or how was your laptop? Or did you get a lot of picture work done on your laptop? Of course, the answer was no to all of those things. Nobody pulled out their laptop. Nobody worked on their laptop at all. Because you're on a train, you know, and it was beautiful out the window and the train swaying back and forth. And I don't know. So I would say that of all the advice I gave during the week, and I try not to give too much advice. You know, I'm more of a put people in a great position and then let them artistically flourish. I'm more that kind of guy, but I do give some advice. The worst advice I gave all week was suggesting to bring a laptop on the train ride from Durango to Silverton. All we were doing was getting a little extra workout for our legs and shoulders when we're walking around Silverton. Anyway, my bag hung perfectly on the hook between each window. And I love the way they did this because you'd have the window where you could slide it up and then right above the window, in between the two of them, not over the window, but in between each set of windows, there would be like a silver hook and you could hang your bag on it. And it just hung perfectly there. It just looked so good. It wasn't too big, wasn't too small. It looked really good. To answer the question, after I do all that talking there, to answer the question, the bag I talked about last week worked out perfectly for not only the train ride to Silverton, but Mesa Verde, hiking along the Animas River, and everywhere else that we went during the week. It worked out really well. Now, I did go with the Nikon ZF and the 28 to 400 millimeter and the 26 millimeter Pancake. I was originally going to take the Olympus OM-1, and I'm definitely taking the Olympus OM-1 to Costa Rica in January. But I had just come off the Alaska trip with the Nikon. And I was just feeling all warm and fuzzy about it because I liked my images so much. And they turned out so well. And I felt like I was in a groove with it. So I just sort of kept the ball rolling with the Nikon. So that's what I took to Durango. And I don't regret it at all because it worked out really fantastic. And I love my shots. And I love the shots I got with my iPhone 15 Pro Max as well. You know, the images just turned out very well. Now, we talked about cameras a lot, as you can imagine, during a workshop, a photography workshop. I'm definitely taking the OM-1 to Costa Rica for a couple reasons. One, because we're going to have some opportunity for macro photography. And Micro Four Thirds is fantastic for macro photography. I think it's much better than full frame because you get that little additional depth of field. And boy, does that help when you're really close to a little tree frog or something like that. And I have cool lenses for it. I have both the 60mm and the 30mm Olympus macro lenses. I'm going to take the 60mm and leave the 30mm at home. So macro photography is one reason. And then, of course, the reach of my 40 to 150mm telephoto lens. Love that lens, f2.8, the Pro model, with a 1.4. So that gets me up to about 420 at f4. So that is pretty darn good. And I think I'm going to go that route because the Nikon lens is a lot slower. I love it for when you're out in regular daylight, but we're going to be under canopies and things like that. And I'm going to need a little bit more light. And then also, and I know people always cringe when I say this, but that 2X electronic doubler built into the OM-1, I think it's great. It works so well. So anyway, so you have that as well. So those are the main two reasons. Then of course, I can pack a couple primes and stuff and they'll hardly take up any space. So OM-1 for Costa Rica, but I did take the Nikon to Durango, the ZF. And I also want to underscore the iPhone, if you have, you know, a current iPhone, 14, 15, or now 16, as a backup camera, is very legitimate as a backup camera. I mean, I would have that big lens on the Nikon. It only goes 28 millimeters wide, which in the old days used to be fun and exciting. Now it's like, it's semi-wide. So then having the ultra-wide and even the wide angle, the 24 millimeter in the iPhone was really nice. And I used it a number of times. That part worked out really well. The camera bag and the cameras worked out fantastic. I have no complaints whatsoever on any of that. And finally, before I go to the next story, I just want to mention our Inner Circle member. So everyone on this trip was an Inner Circle member, which is happening more and more because our membership is growing and because you get a really nice discount when you do a physical workshop. I mean, it's worth signing up just to get the discount because the discount is far more than a whole year's worth of Inner Circle support. You come out ahead. There's no two ways about it. Our Inner Circle members, and we were commenting about this when we were talking amongst ourselves, there's something really special about them. They're engaging, their community, they're supportive of one another. They're kind and tolerant. I mean, we were living together under one big roof. There's just something very enjoyable about our photography community. And I just want to acknowledge every one of our workshop participants because I just enjoyed spending time with you. This was something that honestly I would do if it wasn't my job. if I had an opportunity to hang out with this group, right? Go to all these places that we go together. And if I wasn't even leading it, and I knew that it was the same group of people that come to these workshops, I would go. I would absolutely go. I just enjoy all of your company that much. So just to round this thing out, so then 1,200 miles back home, and I like the first day of coming back home because I'm driving through New Mexico, I'm driving through Arizona, it's real early in the morning, it's beautiful. I have lots of wonderful things to think about, you know, experiences from the week before. That part of it, I just loved. The last few hundred miles coming into city life in California, going through the Bay Area, dealing with people who were not in the same frame of mind as I was. That part wasn't as fun. I was just happy to get home. But it was a fantastic trip. I'm debating whether to put Durango on the docket for next year or not. Still thinking about that. Still, I'm trying to narrow down the possibilities for our 2025 workshop season. I'll be making announcements before too long. If you have a particular bent one way or another, like for instance, if you really want to go to Durango in 2025, make sure you let me know. Either drop me a note, post on the Facebook page, post on our Inner Circle page, wherever you happen to communicate with me, and let me know because we're getting down to the nitty-gritty now and I'm going to have to make a decision pretty soon. Should I buy a medium format digital camera? And this is an article that's on the Lens Rentals lensrentals.com, and I have a link in the show notes. I just thought it was kind of interesting because I actually get this question every now and then, and I thought this was a really good article. You know, he starts out by, you know, saying what a medium format digital camera is. I'm most familiar with the Fujifilm, like the GFX series, because I have one of those. And so if you compare the sensor size of the Fujifilm sensor, which is 43.8 millimeter by 32.9 millimeter, so essentially 44 by 33 millimeters, compared to 35 millimeter, which is 36 millimeter by 24 millimeter, compared to Micro Four Thirds, which is 17 millimeters by 13 millimeter. And he has a picture of the different sensors here so you can see the size. Generally speaking, we think the bigger the sensor, you know, the more benefits that come with having all those extra photo sites. But then he kind of gets into the pros and cons of it. So I'm going to share with you some of the pros and cons that he lists here in case you happen to be thinking about this. So, of course, right off the top, yes, greater resolution, just more pixels you capture with every shot. Now, he lists as a pro also dynamic range. He says current CMOS sensor technology provides effective full well capacities of about 3,000 electrons per square micrometer. If you use full-frame equivalent focal lengths and f-stops with your MF camera, then you can double the time your shutter stays open and you will have a signal-to-noise ratio in the same size prints that's about half a stop better than you would get with a full-frame camera. So he is saying a little better dynamic range, a little better signal-to-noise ratio. Better lens performance at equivalent apertures. This is by no means guaranteed, he says, but all else equal, there's likely to be less vignetting and higher resolution off-axis on the MF lenses. 4:3 aspect ratio. Whether this is a plus or a minus depends on your aesthetic choices. I like 4:3, 4:5, and 1:1 aspect ratios. So a 4:3 aspect ratio lets me use more of the capture than 3:2 aspect ratio on a full frame camera. Those are what he lists as the advantages. But he goes, what do you lose? Better autofocus performance with the full frame and the crop sensor cameras. Modern stacked sensor full frame cameras are miles ahead of medium format ones when it comes to properly focusing on dynamic subjects like birds and sports. They're also better for active children. Frame rate is another thing that you lose. Some modern medium format cameras aren't capable of frame rates that full frame cameras would have been proud of to do just a few years ago. But stacked sensors and full frame cameras have raised the bar so high that medium format cameras can't get there. There are currently no consumer stacked sensor medium format cameras. Weight, size, and cost. Usually, but not always, medium format cameras will be heavier, larger, and more expensive than comparable full-frame cameras. So I thought that was a nice comparison list. I have to say, in fact, this came up during the workshop. You know, I have a GFX. I have the 100S. It's a terrific camera. I have two lenses for it. That's all I can afford. And every now and then I pull it out and I just love shooting with it. But that's every now and then. Not all the time. You know, if I'm headed out the door for something that I'm excited about, I'm either grabbing, you know, the OM-1 or the ZF or the Fujifilm 100. That's what I'm grabbing when I go out the door. I'm not grabbing the GFX. That is more of a planned kind of shoot. So anyway, just a little food for thought. If you're thinking about medium format digital cameras, they're interesting. They can produce amazing image quality, but they're also big and expensive. Speaking of Fujifilm, they're announcing a summit this October with a focus on design and firmware updates. Fujifilm's Next X Summit will be on October 14th, and the company is already teasing what to expect. The summit is going to be at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock a.m. Pacific, and will be held at Fujifilm's Clay Studio in Tokyo. Fujifilm has already a pretty packed 2024 with 2X summits already taking place this year. The first in Tokyo in February to announce the blockbuster Fujifilm X100 VI, along with a raft of firmware and app updates, and the second in Sydney to launch the Fujifilm GFX 100 S2, Fujifilm X-T50, and the Fujifilm XF16-50, and Fujifilm GF 500mm lenses. So that's already happened. And yet we have another one coming up on the 14th, again at 6 a.m. Pacific or 9 a.m. Eastern time. So what can we expect from the October X Summit? Well, Fujifilm has teased a few details, but also left us with some incredibly cryptic breadcrumbs to follow when it comes to what new products might be announced. With most speculation online buzzing around the potential X-Pro 4, XE5, or GFX 100R, would an update to these product lines really be significant enough to bill as a design announcement? Or instead, are we looking at something totally new and revolutionary? Rumors online are pretty wild, and corners of the internet have suggested that perhaps we are looking at a brand new sensor design, size, or even a new panoramic camera. And of course, let's not forget about the lenses. Might I get my wish of a new shrunken down XF16 55mm f2.8? This year is Fujifilm's big 90th anniversary year, and this could potentially be the final X Summit of 2024. I'm expecting Fujifilm to finish the year with a bang, and they have promised that we won't be disappointed. By the way, this article is on digitalcameraworld.com, and I have a link to it in the show notes. So there are all sorts of little leaks here and there about what's going to happen. We will find out that day for sure. Journalists are under NDA, and I hope none of them are talking because they're not supposed to. That's what an NDA means. It means shut up until the 14th. But I do think that there's going to be some very interesting stuff on that day. And if you're a Fujifilm shooter, you might want to tune in. Okay, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. First of all, I want to give just the biggest of shout-outs to our Inner Circle members, both online and those I hang out with in person at the workshop. You guys and gals have really made my year this year. This has been our best Inner Circle year to date, far and away. The most activity, the most interaction, the most pictures. It goes on and on and on. And I'm looking forward to 2025 because I think this momentum is just going to keep building into the new year. If you're interested in joining the Inner Circle, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Once you join, once you sign up, you'll be getting an email from me inviting you to our Inner Circle space. And there you can hang out with the other members of our group. And remember, in 2025, Inner Circle members will get a discount on all of our workshops. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this podcast. And finally, I want to give a tip of the lens cap to our friends at Red River Paper. Now that I'm back, and I'm here for a while because our next workshop, our Safari West Wine Country workshop in November, is out of the TDS studio. So I'll be staying home for a bit, which means I should be able to get to printing. I've got prints selected for Alaska. I have prints almost selected for Durango. It's still a little early. I'm still working on them. And I think I'm going to start out with a couple of fine art note card sets for the holiday. I'm going to do a note card set from Alaska, and I'm going to do one from Colorado. And the hardest part, honestly, of the whole thing is deciding which shots will be in the set. And the way that I like to do it, I like to get the Red River Paper note cards. They have a variety of surfaces, Then I choose usually 6 shots, and I make 2 cards of each shot. So each note card set has 12 cards in it. And then I get the matching envelopes, also from Red River Paper. And I put the whole thing together, and it's just a wonderful gift. And I have, you know, some information on the back of the card about the location. I like to leave the inside of the card blank. The paper is such a lovely texture and surface that it just feels good to hold them. It feels good to write on them. You know, they have that little bit of tooth that's fantastic. 2 sets of note cards, 12 each, 6 different shots. I can't wait to get this thing going. If you're interested in doing your own printing project, then just click on the Red River Paper tile that's on all the pages of the digital story. Nose around a bit. Use our coupon code to get free shipping. Get yourself some paper. Make some beautiful artwork and share it with the world. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm working on some great stuff for next week. Make sure you come back and join us. Until then, get out there, take some photos, make some art. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.